Hello everyone, welcome to the Laura Horn Art Podcast. When it comes to the tech side of being an artist, there's a lot to get your head around. Website design, social media, video editing, email marketing, the list goes on. If you struggle with this or just need a bit of encouragement, you will love today's guest. I am chatting with mixed media artist Robin Marie Smith. In this episode, Robin Marie shares her story from the early days of recording online classes with a camcorder right through to the tech-based membership site she runs today. What I love about Robin Marie's approach is that she understands that artists would rather be making art than spending hours behind a screen. Her suggestions are practical, affordable, and user-friendly. And when it comes to art, Robin Marie has a similar mindset, using accessible supplies and loose intentions to maintain a consistent art practice. I hope that you enjoy the episode and it encourages you to make the most of the technologies that we have available to us as artists. So how are you, Robin Marie?
I am doing great. I am looking forward to fall here, and although we don't really get our fall winter until much later, you don't get a change of season there, do you?
We do get seasons. It's not as dramatic, but we certainly have like all the leaves that get very colourful in the fall, and we have like a proper winter that gets cold, and then our summers are very hot. But it depends on where you live in Australia. So I live in Adelaide, which has a lot more seasons, but if you live up north, it's hotter for most of the year. So it depends you are, but I love the season, so I'm happy to be where I am.
Yeah, well, we don't get that much here. You know, you might get a few trees that change, but for the most part in Florida, it just pretty much stays, other than the temperatures dropping and it not being so humid. But it is what we have, so.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you on the podcast. I've been following you for a long time, and you've been on my radar to have on as a guest for ages. So I'm so happy that you're here and we get to do this and have this conversation.
Well, I'm excited as well. I was thrilled when I heard from you because I listen to your podcasts, and of course I follow your work as well. And it's just an honor to be here. Thank you very much.
So where should we begin? I always think that it's lovely to hear how an artist got started. So can you tell us about the beginnings of your art practice?
Well, if we want to go way back to the beginning, I was always a creative child. My parents didn't quite know where it came from because they were not creative themselves. So I was always interested in trying out any of the latest things that were out there, whether it was back then, latch hook rugs, paintings of different things. I loved my eighth grade art teacher. She was amazing. I learned so much from her. So I was always dabbling creatively. And throughout high school, I did started kind of keeping back then was a, you know, kind of a visual journal that was more cutting out magazine images and things like that. We didn't really have it the way we do today. I was one of those kids that I really wanted to pursue something in art, but when I took all the tests to go into college, they were like, can't make a living at this. You need to try something that, you know, will help you have a job and make a living. And so back then it was computers. And so I went into computer programming when I was in college, didn't like it, didn't stay with it, but I didn't pursue art as a degree, but I did it on the side. I always wanted to learn new things, and it just kind of evolved. And then over time, as I became an adult and got married and started pursuing it more as a hobby on the side, I realized, you know what, I can do this, and started looking to figure out what it was I wanted to do. And really, art journaling or visual journaling was my big step into mixed media. That was the end. I was like, once I discovered that, I wanted to learn everything. So I've always been creative, but where I'm at now kind of launched in when I was more in journaling. So
what is it that drew you in about mixed media and art journaling?
Well, I think for me, it was the fact that I could use so many different mediums that in one place, and it was perfect for experimenting, and it was perfect for playing, because to me, a journal wasn't precious. You know, it was not like a expensive canvas or something like that. And it was just, I could be very expressive and I could pull in all these different things I wanted to try. And I thought it was beautiful. I thought, this is something I want to do. I want to have these for myself so I can look back at them later and not only see things I did in my life, but also see a progression in the things that I've learned over the years. And so I think, one, it was just beautiful to me. And then being able to incorporate so many different mediums into it was just really appealing to me.
So it started as a hobby. At what stage did it become a business?
Well, that's an interesting story. we had a rubber stamp store that opened in the town where I live, and we didn't have one anywhere nearby. So I was super excited. I wanted to be the first one there to welcome her. And we became friends, as a matter of fact. And little by little, she would encourage me to start teaching. And I was like, I'm not ready for that. I don't think I can do that. But she said, just keep it simple. And it started out more as just making cards and kind of doing that. And then I was ordering rubber stamps one day. And I thought to myself, you know, if I made my own stamps, I would have the ones I really wanted. And so I started a rubber stamp company. And that was back in 2003. I have since closed it. But that really opened the door up to becoming a business owner and expanding on that. So that's kind of how it started.
It's amazing how many great ideas or businesses grow from that thought process of there's something out there that I want that isn't available yet. So I'm going to make it myself.
That's right. And then I'll have what I want. And then lo and behold, other people wanted it. And it was like, oh, okay, there's a business going on here. Exactly.
Did you start teaching after that, like running workshops and things like that? Or what were the different aspects of your business?
Yeah, I did. And this was during a time when we didn't have Instagram, we didn't have Facebook. And so to get your name out there, it really meant that I needed to travel and teach around the country. And I also was teaching at the National Art Retreats. Art and Soul, Art Unraveled, there were several at the time, and then also teaching in various, mostly rubber stamp stores that wanted mixed media. They wanted to offer classes in that. And then I taught locally as well, and I loved teaching. I realized how much I loved it, but you got burned out really easily on it. After so much time, it was a lot to be on the road and traveling so much. And that's when I started dabbling in just doing online courses and kind of mixing that in. And that was relatively new at the time. It was like, where do you teach them? How do you do this? But I love the tech side of things as well. So it was like a challenge for me to figure it all out and to actually implement it.
So when did you create your first online course?
I would say it was probably around 2006 or 2007, it was somewhere in there, because I remember it was when I really needed to stop traveling quite as much because I was really feeling burned out. And I thought, well, I've got these classes that I've been teaching. Why couldn't I just film them and then teach them online? And like I said, back then we didn't have the resources as far as the platforms to offer them. So I just had to go on the search and figure it out. And I've learned so much since those early days, and I'm much better at it than I was back then. But yeah, I think it was probably around 2006, 2007.
Definitely in the early days of online classes. I'm trying to think, there weren't social media platforms then. So this is all website-based, bringing people to your website to take the course.
Exactly. But the thing was, Laura, having traveled prior to that, I was able to, you know, cobble together an email list and had a way to contact people that had, you know, that had reached out to me or I'd met during these, you know, in-person workshops. And so they already knew who I was. And so that really benefited me back then, being able to get my name out there in that way, so that when I did start teaching online and offering things, it was easier for me because I already had that. And plus I had the stamp company behind me as well. And so I had customers and then they were interested in learning more. And so that really did help back then.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. I hear artists talk about how they started doing in-person teaching or being at art markets and things like that, where they're out in the community. And then when they translate that into an online business, you've already got an audience, and it doesn't even need to be a huge audience to get started, because then there's the word of mouth and everything that flows from that.
Absolutely. Yep. And I still have connections with many that I met and spoke with personally in those classes. And they'll say, I don't know if you remember this, but we had this conversation. And I love that because they're still with me today. A lot of them are. And it's being able to have that connection in person is wonderful. If you can do it, you know, it is. And I still enjoy teaching in person. And I'm very selective. I don't teach as much just because it's a lot to do it and to travel and to be out there. But I do enjoy it very much when I am, and I do miss it quite a bit.
What were some of the challenges when you first started creating online offerings?
Well, the number one thing was equipment, because that was something I had to really learn. When I started, and people will gasp when I say this, my husband had a camcorder that had the little reel tapes in it. And so I used a camcorder, and I had a step ladder that I jerry-rigged onto the dining room table where I could put a monopod on it to have my camera attached to it. It was quite entertaining, actually, and I learned a lot from that on what to do, what not to do. And I think one of the things I give advice, you know, to my students when it comes to this is think of yourself as the student, and what do you like as a student? What do you not like as being a student? And make that experience better. You know, what is it that you really love about it when you're a student, and what makes you enjoy a class? And so doing it that way and having that mindset really helped. And of course, over time, increasing or getting better with the technology and better equipment and learning that really helped. But that was a challenge in the beginning because it was sort of like, well, how do I do this? Because there really wasn't anywhere to go to research it and figure out how to do it because it was so long ago. Of course, it wasn't that long ago, but it seems like forever ago that I started doing that. So I would say that was initially one of the bigger challenges.
I have so much admiration for you in doing that at that time and learning all that stuff and pulling it together. It's brilliant. And, you know, I have help with Richie, you know, being sort of on the tech side of my business. And so when I hear artists talking about putting it together themselves and doing everything and recording it and knowing all about that and the sound and the light, and it's a lot. It's a lot to take on and learn.
It's a skill set that really, you know, being a business owner, you know, being a creative, I consider myself, I always say I really am skilled in both right brain and left brain. And I always kind of joke that say where I lack in my creative ability, I make up in my tech abilities. But I feel like, you know, a lot of us don't have that skill set. And so it's something else we have to learn, especially today, because it is so techy now. And there's so much out there to learn and to get better at that. You have to do the continuing education to get better at it and try to at least gain some sense of that skill set that a lot of us don't have, well, creatives don't have.
Well, that leads me into asking you about how your art business has changed, because I know that some time ago you made a decision to move away a little bit from teaching art and focus on helping artists with this side of the business, the tech. So how did you come to making that decision?
Well, it wasn't an easy decision because I had, you know, as I mentioned, I had my rubber stamp store. I sold my own art, and it was very busy with both of those. And so it was 2 summers ago. So it was 2018. It was prior to that, of course, but I closed both of those stores down in the summer of 18. I remember telling my husband, I have this idea and, you know, what do you think? And he's kind of like, I don't know about that. You know, I'm not sure how that's going to work, you know, but I support you 100%. So I decided after not only helping friends that knew I was tech savvy, but also having others hear about me and saying, so-and-so recommended I reach out to you and I have these questions. I was finding that skill set, as I mentioned, was holding a lot of creatives back. They wanted a website. They wanted to be able to film. They wanted to be able to take better photographs. They wanted to be able to do the technical things they just couldn't figure out how to do, nor did they have the time to sit and Google things they didn't really know how to Google. Because if you don't really know what you're looking for and how to, you know, express it, how do you know what to look for? And not just that, but Laura, part of it is too, is finding someone out there or a resource that can speak to them where they are as a creative, as an artist. You know, I don't teach and I don't run my membership as I'm speaking to a yoga instructor. I am teaching them as they are artists, just like me. So I know what they're going to ask. I know the things they're thinking because I am that person as well. And I've been there. So I think that I just felt like I really loved teaching and helping in that area because I felt like there was such a need for it. And the impact was so great because it was something they just couldn't overcome and without the help, the right help. And so it was an easy decision in that way because I knew it brought me joy to help the ones I had already been helping that I thought, I want to start helping more people. And that's when I made the decision. So that's when I started my membership, was a couple years ago. So,
were there any aspects to that decision that were difficult?
Yes and no. One was tech related, honestly, because I knew how I wanted my vision for my membership to be. And I had to find the right platform because I wanted it to be and look and function a certain way. And the regular just upload your art courses to this kind of platform was not going to serve that purpose. So I really had to do some research and I had to learn some things from a technical standpoint that I didn't already know to make that happen. But I think the biggest challenge, it has been kind of ongoing, Laura, and that is explaining what it is and what it can do for my members and my students. Because as creatives and artists, we're used to taking online courses, but we're not used to a membership type of structure. I mean, we know about Netflix. We know how to sign up for a membership and you pay a fee and then you just watch all the videos you want. That has been kind of challenging for me that I did not expect, is that mindset of this isn't one big course. This is a whole bunch of courses all in one place that cover a variety of topics. And so I think explaining it and helping those on the outside understand exactly what it is and what it can do for them has been some challenge to me. And that's a skill set as well, right? Marketing, promotion, that's a skill set in and of itself as well.
So for anyone who's listening, who's interested in what your membership site is, Here's an opportunity for you to explain it. Now that you've been talking about the challenge of it, but I thought perhaps you could explain what people would get in there, because I know from talking to artists and interacting with the listeners of this podcast that this comes up again and again and again, the challenge of managing that tech side of the business and knowing that there's so many opportunities out there. If you can just do some of these things, if you can, record a class or make a podcast or take beautiful photographs of your art, these are valuable skills. So what is it that people who are listening can learn from your membership site?
It's structured in a way that I don't have members just pop in there and just jump right into the meat. I have them, I guide them through starting with really social media and getting organized, because everyone that has come in that I've worked with has said, I thought I knew everything about Instagram, but I went ahead and went through the training and wow, I realized I didn't know everything and I've learned so much. So it gives them some confidence starting out where they get those small wins and then they can move on and they can learn about creating graphics and they can learn about how to create their website, which is very extensive. And a lot of my members come in there for that. I help them with their shops. I help them with their list building, creating, what they can send to their mailing list. We talk about filming, video editing. I have training on dozens and dozens and dozens of software programs in there. But I think one of the key things too, is not just the way that things are filmed directly for them in a way that they can really understand and move through it, is that I am there to guide them. This isn't where you come in and you don't ever hear from me. I am there. I do video calls when need be. I go through and do audits on the websites. I really help. Really, I'm in there and I'm present. And I think I'm sort of that lifeline and that guide as they're moving through all of this training, where I'm there to help them. Some need more help than others, but I'm there for them to be able to answer their personalized questions. They'll get stuck on something. Or just the other day, someone was launching their website and they had one thing that wasn't quite working right. And so I just step in and I actually help with any of those kinds of things. To me, that's invaluable to have that leader there to go, I know I can reach out to her anytime and she's going to be able to help me and answer my question or give me advice on, the best way to do this or that. So the training is extensive though, and I believe that depending on what you're looking for, the answer is there. Now I don't have every software under the sun in there. I teach what I believe and work with that I really love. And you and I both are on Squarespace and I love Squarespace. So the training for that and the shop and for blogging is all on that platform. But I have moved a lot of folks over from WordPress and some other platforms. And it's just so rewarding when they launch their website. I had one student say, I've had a splash page on WordPress for 6 years. And she goes, I finally have my website done now that I was in Makers Tech U. And so I just love that. It makes me so happy to hear that. So I hope that kind of answered it. There's so much in there that I do training on that I could just go on about it.
And your website is a wonderful resource. I was over there having a look yesterday and I love it. I love the way your website flows and you've got some really practical, useful information on things and also in your podcast because you have a podcast as well.
I do, yes.
And what I was noticing there was that you have these really specific episodes like how to create an online challenge or how to use Instagram Reels, which I haven't actually tried or figured out yet. So I was thinking I should really listen to that. So there's a lot of information over there. And I also mm-hmm. noticed that you use Trello, which I do as well.
Oh my gosh. That was a game changer. I mean, and I start them out in Maker's Tech with some simple things in Trello. I cannot tell you how many people have said, oh my gosh, how come I didn't know about this? This is like life changing for me. It's awesome. Yes, Trello is amazing.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear another Trello fan because I use Trello to run pretty much the whole business. It's amazing and I'd be lost without it. It's transformed the way I think and approach each month, week and ideas and brainstorming and setting up the podcast and it's brilliant.
So, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's visual. So it's appealing to those of us that are creatives, I think even more so because it's graphically appealing and it just makes sense. I think the way our brains work. But the first time I actually used it was to set up a record of all my online courses that I had actually signed up for. And I keep them organized by topic. I have all the information is in there. So I never forget a course I signed up for or couldn't find. I always go to Trello and it's in there. I don't have to go back to my emails or I don't go to a spreadsheet. I go right there. And if there's downloads for that course, I just put them right there in the Trello card and everything is right there. It's amazing all that it can do, truly. You already know.
That's such a good idea. I don't actually have that one, but I do have a record of all my subscriptions. So things like MailChimp, Squarespace, and you know things that you use in your business because these days there's so many I find when you're using things like social media schedulers and all sorts
of
things that you log into. So I have a record of those just so that I'm not actually paying for something that I'm not using. So every now and then I go in and check. Actually, I thought it would be interesting to ask you if you have some favorite tools other than Trello, which we both love and know, but are there some other things that you like to use in your business?
I'll go through what you had just mentioned, a scheduler. I love to use Planoly for Instagram. I definitely post off the cuff and impromptu, but I also like to plan because I will often take photographs of things and I'm like, I want to use this at some point, but I don't really want to use it now. And if I can upload that right to the scheduler and have it in the account, then I don't have to worry about finding it later. I really like having the ability to see everything graphically and what it will look like. So I really like using that. I would say probably within the last year, maybe more, I switched from iMovie to Camtasia. And I love Camtasia. It does a lot more, I don't know, it has more fancy bells and whistles. I mean, there's other software out there that's even more advanced, but I'm really enjoying using Camtasia for video editing. And it also will allow me to pull the audio out and actually save the audio if I want to do that as well. So it's got a lot of really cool features in it. And I've really have enjoyed switching over to it and using that versus using iMovie. And, you know, the other thing is you don't have to use every expensive thing out there. There's a lot of things that are much more affordable that will still meet your needs. And especially when that's not what we do for a living, I don't edit video for a living. So I want to have something that will do what I want it to do, but then also allow me to do it effectively and not and quickly, you know, where I don't want there to be this huge learning curve to try to figure it out. So what else do I use? Just little things. I like to use, here's something. I was just looking at my desktop. There's a little app called Sketch that will allow you to do quick screenshots where you can put annotations on them. I use that a lot for quick screenshots of things I want to share with people and put little notes on them or arrows or whatever. That's really cool. And then I use Loom for doing quick videos, to do maybe quick instruction or to do a quick one, like say for my Maker's Tech members when I need to just show them, hey, this is how you do that really quick. It's so much faster using a video to do that. And so I really like using Loom for that. I'm trying to think of what other things I use for my business. I know there's a whole bunch, but I'm like right now, it's like, you know, other than Trello, which is like at the top of the list for sure.
Yeah, they sound like a few of the main ones that I use as well, although I am not familiar with Loom, so I'll have to have a look at that one.
Oh, Loom, yeah. It's I've been using it since it first was in beta, and it's really nice. They actually have the app now for your computer, so you can actually just record screen recording right from there. But it's nice because then the videos are hosted, or you can just share the link, and then whoever you're sharing it with can just pop right over and watch it, rather than having to get the video to them either through a Dropbox or other means. It's really nice. It's really, really, it's been great for me. I've really enjoyed using that for my business.
So I know that you love to help artists with the tech side of things and the business stuff, but how do you balance that with your own art practice? This is something as a business owner myself, I'm always curious about.
That's a tough one. I think we, all of us that are, you know, business owners, or we're doing this, but we want to do our art at the same time. And I find oftentimes the art kind of gets pushed aside more often than I would like. If I'm really intentional about scheduling time and saying, all right, this block of time is going to be marked off for just going in and painting. And if I don't feel like I've got the creative mojo right then, there's been times where I've just said, okay, the tech stuff, or that's going to have to wait, and I'm going to go paint right now, or I'm going to go create. But I think if I'm really intentional about it, I will do it. But if I let myself get bogged down and just do the busy and the business and don't force myself to put that on a schedule and really be intentional about it, it'll go days and days and weeks before I even go in the studio. And granted, there's going to be times when, you know, the beginning of the month for me is busy because I have to do my tax stuff and my bookkeeping and get things done with that. So that is a time when during that week, it's going to be a little heavier on the business side. But I think that if you know and you can understand how much time it's going to take, and you just do the best you can to kind of balance it. And I mean, I don't know if I ever really balance it. I think there's just times when it leans more towards the business side, and then I do more of the art, and then I, you know, stay up really late working on some of the business stuff or whatever. But I think being intentional is really important for me, because then that will be like, look, you scheduled this time, you go in there. I think it's like scheduling your workouts or scheduling time for exercise. If you don't really schedule it, you probably will let it go and slip and you won't do it. So I feel that way about the creative time too.
So do you put it in your calendar? Do you set a particular day or anything like that? Or do you just look at each week and kind of see what's happening and try and make some time?
You know, I've tried it both ways. I used to say, okay, every Friday, I'm going to block off Fridays. I'm only going to, you know, I'm going to be in the studio on Fridays. That doesn't work for me. I work better where I kind of look at the week and I say, okay, what do you have scheduled? What's on there? And then, okay, this looks good between, you know, this time or this, or looking at it and say, just do something in there on Tuesday. Or if I've got a block of time open on Thursday, it just changes every week depending on what's on my schedule and what commitments I have. And then I just kind of fiddle around with that. And you know what, Laura, sometimes I want to do the tech stuff. Like, I'm in the mood for that. Like, I want to get in and record videos. I want to do things that are techy, because that side of my brain loves that. So I like to do both. So I have to kind of like balance, like, oh, today I don't feel like doing art. Today I want to do the tech side stuff. But if I just look at the week to week and say, all right, this looks good for today, or how do I feel in the morning? And I know that not everyone can do that, but there'll be some mornings I wake up and think, oh, I feel like I really want to go in there and paint today. I want to go in there and do something. Okay, what's on the calendar? Okay, these things can be moved over to this day or whatever. I'm going to go in there today and do this. So it kind of fluctuates, I guess. There's not like a rule of thumb of how I do it.
I can't believe how similar my experience has been to what you're saying, because I went down the route of trying to schedule it in on a certain day and saying these would be my studio days, and that didn't work. And I've found myself now in a very similar situation where I take a quite fluid, flexible approach to it, and it's working much better.
Yes. Well, we're definitely alike in that, because that has definitely been of what I've tried. Because, you know, there's different gurus out there who will say, well, do it this way, or I do it this way, schedule it this way. And you try things. It's no different than trying the favorite brush that your favorite artist uses, or the paint. And then you realize, I don't really like this, but I like this one, or I like that. You know, we have to figure out what works for us individually. And if it takes trying a few different ways to figure out what that is, then do it, you know, and figure it out. And our life changes too. You know, I think we go through these cycles and we go through these periods of time where maybe I need to do it a little differently. But right now where I'm at and where I've been for a while is, like you said, kind of have it be fluid, where it's just sort of like, what do I feel like doing today? And if there's nothing majorly pressing, and I mean like time sensitive today, I'll just say, okay, I'm going in the studio and I'm just going to close the door. And when I'm done, I'm done. And I'm usually really, those are great days because I felt like I really wanted to be in there and I could feel that that was the right thing to do that day.
Well, I think tuning into what it is that you want to create is so important, because when you mentioned before, there are some days that you want to do the techie stuff. I always find when I listen to that voice, that's when I do my best work, whether it's the business work or the art. There's definitely different days or times for different things.
And I tend to be very goal-oriented in terms of not huge, but like, for instance, I'll use this as an example. If I say, all right, I'm going to focus on creating, you know, XYZ or whatever that is, I feel like, all right, I have something to think about and focus on when I go in there. I don't do as well when I go in and say, what do I feel like doing? Or what am I going to do today? I might not really get a whole lot done. But if I'm more intentional again about even what I'm going to create, like for instance, during the period of the 100-day project, which I've done for 4 years, I am just so creative because I have a focus and a goal and I know what I'm going to be doing. And then I just kind of do it. And I like working that way, where I kind of have an idea, you know, whether I'm going to create 3 paintings of something, or I'm going to work on collage or my art journal or whatever. It tends to work better for me when I have a loose goal, I guess I'd say, not something that's so concrete that I can't move around and adapt.
Well, it can get pretty overwhelming when you don't have something to kind of, you know, a container of some sort.
Because there's
just so many options. So I think it is very helpful to have some kind of idea that you're working towards. And like you said, have it be loose so that you can change and adapt with it. But you've got something that you can focus on. So I think that's a great, great tip. And it works with art and it works with the business as well.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
So when you get into your studio, what do you like to create and how do you approach it?
Well, I would say right now, where I'm at, I am enjoying working on paper. I've been really trying to stretch myself and try to get over onto some canvas, but I'm having a really hard time because I love paper and I like an inexpensive sketchbook paper where I can use watercolor and pastels and pencils and a lot of different mediums on it and just working really loose and playful. And I'm enjoying that thoroughly. So I've kind of, each time I go in there, I think, okay, I might try something different. No, I want to do this. This is what I want to focus on. And I'm really enjoying that right now. And I've been exploring ways to take that, even though it's on paper, and mount it onto canvas so that I get the benefit of having a finished piece on canvas and not just a piece of paper, but I get to play and explore and have fun on the substrate that I really like right now. So, so that's what I've been kind of working on right now and really enjoying and exploring some different mediums. I've probably since, I guess about March of this year, I started incorporating soft pastels with water into my work, and I have loved it. And I've just really been enjoying that process of all of that working together.
I noticed that you use sketchbook paper for a lot of your art rather than watercolor paper, which is fascinating to me. Because when I work mostly on watercolor paper. So when I took a look and I was like, oh, it's so different and it's crinkly and inviting. Yes. And it also looks so freeing. And watercolor paper is expensive. So it can be a big barrier to your creativity. And I see that with my students. You know, you've got this expensive piece of paper in front of you and you're worried about stuffing it up and wasting money because that's the reality of it. So the way that you work looks freeing in many different ways, like the way that you approach it, the looseness of your approach, but also the materials that you use encourage that freedom.
Yeah, and I really love the idea. And I mean, this is just how I work. I like to work kind of, like I said, if I work with the paper, often it gets cut up. like I will cut it into pieces and then I'll sew on it and add more collage to it. It turns into something totally different. And sometimes I'll keep it the way it is and use it. But for the most part, I don't think it's even precious once it's completed, because often I do end up cutting it up and using it for other things. So
you must have stacks and stacks of papers, journals. I mean, you've been making art for a very long time.
Yes, I do. In fact, I had to do a studio reclaim last month where I really had to go through a lot of stuff because paper is my weakness. I have so much that I've painted, that I've worked on, that I've, and so I had to do some organizing. And I have journals, some they're just stored up in, you know, up in baskets inside the studio. I need to get those down sometime and just kind of go through them and see where I've come from, you know, how I've progressed over the years. And that's always fun, you know, to see that process. But yes, I've got quite a bit of painted papers and various things as well. Yes, for sure.
So how do you think your art has changed over the years? I'm trying to think how many years you've been art journaling for. When did you start the art journaling?
I would say it was probably around 2003, 2002, somewhere in there.
Wow.
you know, my story is that when I first started any kind of mixed media, doing any of that, I used very muted colors, browns, darks, like I was nothing like what I use now. And I'm not sure, you know, I think the mindset was that one, maybe I'm not a real artist, so I don't use all the colors. I don't have, you know, that's for people that know what they're doing, maybe, you know, I don't know. And so then I'm thinking, all right, well, maybe that's not really the case. And so over the time and over some years, I started getting a little bit braver in using color. And now if you look at the comparison between what I started with, it was very different in terms of color has been the biggest change. Now I like to mix every color possible. And I often will have people say, I don't know how you mix all those colors together and have it look like it looks, you know, it's just, I don't know either. It just does that, you know, but yeah, I would say that's probably the biggest thing is the evolution of the colors and how I mix them and use them together has been a big change for me.
One of the things that I'd like to go back to and just touch on is your podcast, Creatives Get Real. And because I have a podcast, I'm always curious about how others approach their podcast, what inspired it, how they feel about it, all of those things. So what inspired you to start the podcast?
I co-host the podcast with my friend, Sandy Keene. She and I have been friends for over 10 years. She lives near me, so we do have that benefit of kind of being in the same town. And we would spend a lot of time together creating or over lunch, and we would have these conversations, these real conversations. And I would say, and she would say at times, you know what, that would have made a great podcast. And we go, yeah, that would have. And so we said that for so long. And then I finally decided, I think I want to give this a try. And so I remember asking her, I said, what do you think about co-hosting a podcast with me? She is very much a collaborator. She loves to do things with others. And she was like, yes, I want to do this. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. And we talked about it because there's a lot to go into planning and preparing and, you know, how do you do it? And of course I love all that side of it. So I was like, well, I'll take care of all of that. But we decided that we were going to take a little different approach to this. And we said, we wanted this to be real conversations that were very, again, real, but we wanted the podcast to be real as well. It's not super polished. I do edit out things that shouldn't be in there, but we're not super fancy with it. And we just keep it super real. And we have thoroughly enjoyed it. Again, these are conversations that others have said to us, I feel like we're just sitting in the room together, just like having this talk while we're creating art. And I said, that's exactly how we wanted it to feel, because that's where it kind of came from, were these conversations that we have with each other over creating or lunch or whatever. We want it to be, the feeling of it to be like you're sitting in a restaurant and you're eating alone, and there's a table of some maybe other ladies that are nearby, and they're having this conversation about something, and you're sort of leaning over, trying to inconspicuously listen to what they're saying because you want to be a part of it. That's how we want our conversations to be. And that's what our goal was with the podcast. And We love doing it. It's a lot of fun.
I absolutely love that approach because that's my favorite type of podcast. I enjoy the chatty, casual, artist-to-artist kind of conversations. They're so enjoyable because sometimes you can feel quite alone as an artist, and it's amazing the difference when you can put on a podcast while you're in the studio and you can hear artists chatting about all the same sorts of things that you grapple with or you laugh about or you enjoy or you're passionate about. Yeah, I love podcasts, and I'm always very excited to find a new one or to hear the artists are taking that leap and making a podcast and sharing it with others, because I just don't think you can have enough podcasts in the world.
No, I agree. And we just love it. And it's so rewarding. And I know this happens to you as well, where you release the podcast and then you get these messages that are like, oh my gosh, you must have been in my brain thinking, you just knew exactly where I was at. Like at the moment we get these messages of, I was just thinking this, this is something I'm dealing with right now. And I love when that happens because, you know, you just know that you're touching and having an impact, and that just makes you happy to do it. So,
yeah, mm-hmm. We definitely have that too.
Yep.
I also wanted to ask you whether there's something on the tech side or the business side that you think that artists should be getting educated about or getting into. Like, is there something new that you're loving?
Well, I mean, right off the top of my head, you mentioned Reels earlier, because most of us are on Instagram, and it's a great platform for us to promote ourselves and our work and engage and build that community. Aside from the website, which, you know, I feel very strongly and passionate about artists and creators having a website, a home base, let me say a home base, doesn't have to have all the bells and whistles, but have a home base. I would say Reels, because right now it's timely and it's new, and Instagram is going to favor accounts that are going to, they're using it. They're going to, I saw it happen with mine to test it out, and the boost and the number of views, and it's amazing because it's a new thing that they want us to be using. And it's not a whole lot different than doing stories. So I would say invest some time into doing the Reels. And it's really cool because they are 15 to 30 seconds. I just saw the change that now you can do 30 seconds, but those can be added. If you do a 15, you can put that in your story as well. So it's not like you only one place. You could put it in both places if you wanted to. And then of course on highlights, it can live in there as well. So I think that Reels is a good thing to be investing some time into right now, for sure.
You've encouraged me because I haven't actually experimented with it at all, but I have been seeing them over on Instagram and seeing how popular they are. Like you mentioned, giving your feed a bit of a boost, and they're a lot of fun as well. I've seen some ones that have really made me laugh and smile.
You don't have dance if you don't want to dance, but you know, it's like the TikTok rage. If you don't want to get in front of the camera and dance, don't. But there's lots of things that you could you could show in a reel. You know, I started out with just showing snippets of the redo of my studio space and how I'm organizing things, and you can show off your supplies and things that you really enjoy using. Yeah, it can be any of those things. It doesn't have to be something like really, really profound. Just have fun with it.
Okay, you've set me a challenge now. On the back of this podcast, I'm going to put a reel out.
Awesome.
So I'm wondering if anyone listening is thinking the same thing. So if you are, put it out there and let's mention Robin Marie has inspired us.
I want to see it. Yes. Don't be the first reel. I'll cheer you on.
What's your Instagram handle?
It's Robin Marie. It's RobenMarie.
Okay. All right. So tag Robin. And we'll get some reels out into cyberspace after this podcast comes out. Well, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. It's been absolutely wonderful to chat with you. And I feel like we've actually got a lot in common. As I hear some of the answers to your questions, I'm like, yep, that's me. That's me again.
I love that. Yes, I love that. It's been a pleasure talking with you as well. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Thank you, Robin Marie. Take care and enjoy the rest of your evening.
Okay, thank you. You do the same. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
What a brilliant episode. I hope that you enjoyed it and it encourages you to embrace some new technologies. I know that after I had this conversation, I felt inspired to finally try using Instagram Reels. I've been holding off and feeling a little bit overwhelmed by it, but now I feel like I have the courage to give it a go. And if you want to join me in trying out Instagram Reels, make sure that you tag Robin Marie so that she sees it. Her Instagram handle is at Robin Marie, and I'll just spell that for you. It's R-O-B-E-N-M-A-R-I-E. And you can also tag Robin Marie in your Instagram stories about the episode, because we always love seeing those. And one last thing before I go, don't forget that this month's featured class is Piece by Piece, a relaxing mixed media collage class suitable for all levels. You can save 20% until the 19th of November using the coupon 20PBP. So that's 20PBP. So just head on over to laurahornart.com/classes and select Piece by Piece. The class is $28 with the discount and comes with lifetime access, downloadable videos, and an optional Facebook group. Thanks again, everyone. I hope that you'll tune in and join us next time.